Broadcasting from deep in the Eublepharis galaxy, on a small planet called Gekonia, east of the Albino Hills and south of the raging Leucistic River, comes the one, the only, Gecko Nation Radio.
Good evening, fellow gecko enthusiasts. Today is Sunday, March 9th, 2014, and we're going to mix it up a little bit tonight, and I believe the geckos that we're going to talk about tonight are probably quickly becoming the second most popular gecko species, I would think, and that's crested geckos. Tonight for this special show, I've invited Danny Schaefer and Buddy Delator of Cresty Central to join us, and they are two young guys that have a lot of knowledge and experience keeping and breeding crested geckos, and they've now started their own small business related to their hobby. So this is great. A lot of people in the community are taking that next step and, you know, using their enthusiasm and their interest to make an income and bring in money from their passion, their hobby, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, they say if you can make money doing something you love, you never work a day in your life. You know, these are the first steps in trying to accomplish that. Now, not everybody's going to be able to do it. It takes a really dedicated person to stick things through and really, owning a business and being a business owner is tough. And there's a lot of competition, and there's so many different things that you need to learn and go through in order to be successful at it. So I'm excited to see these guys doing what they love to do. And, you know, crested geckos, their care requirements are, I guess, even easier than leopard geckos in many ways. And leopard geckos are pretty much one of the easiest species of geckos to keep in captivity. And, you know, we have a special fondness for leopard geckos on this show, and all geckos and all reptiles, of course. But I'm excited to talk about crested geckos. I've always admired them. I just never really took the plunge and, you know, got my own group of, you know, for breeding or, you know, really got serious into it. So maybe tonight's show will help me, you know, spark some more of my own interest in them. So everybody else, I want to let you guys know, over the last couple of days, yesterday and today, our affiliate Herpentime did some amazing coverage at the Texas Rattlesnake Festival. Now, what's interesting is the Texas Rattlesnake Festival is a no-kill educational event. This same weekend, like an hour and a half away or 100 miles away, the Texas Rattlesnake Roundup was going on, and that's the event where they actually do the horrific things to rattlesnakes. And if you don't know about the Sweetwater Roundup, you should look into it. It's terrible what they do to these animals. You can go on YouTube and type in Rise Against Rattlesnake Roundups. Basically, we are trying to put an end to these roundups. They do terrible things to rattlesnakes. They cut their heads off, wave them around while they're still alive. People bring their children to these events, and they drain the blood out of the snakes, and they let their children put their hands in the blood and then put their hands on the wall to make a palm print. It's just really unevolved behavior. So we're trying to raise awareness, we're trying to enlighten people, and we're trying to put an end to these horrific, roundups, these poor rattlesnakes. So if you want to listen to yesterday and today's show, they were great. And this is at the no-kill event. I was lucky enough and I was honored to be able to co-host with JD for the Saturday show. And I wasn't able to do today's show. But check it out, Herpentime Radio, awesome affiliate of ours. And it's actually my inspiration to start GNR. So another thing, hope everybody turn their clocks forward. It's daylight savings time. I am fed up with this winter. I'm sure everybody else is. And hopefully we can get on to some warm weather soon. And I'd like to make everybody aware of something. Facebook has basically adjusted their algorithms, and they've become much more restrictive as far as what people actually see. So, for instance, we've been noticing that a lot of the posts just don't get seen by as many of our followers as they used to. basically, it's Facebook's way of trying to encourage people to pay to get their posts sponsored or get their posts seen by the community. And it's like $5 a day at the minimum to get your page or your post seen. And, you know, this is basically a nonprofit thing that we're doing. So we can't really afford to promote everything. I mean, occasionally I will, of course. But so what we're asking is, we're asking if you like Echinacean Radio, help us reach more people and help us share the page and the posts, if you would, and the links to the shows. So this way other people see them and be able to benefit from this resource of ours. And in return for helping the show, I'm devising a thing. I've done this in the past, and basically I do these secret prizes and these secret raffles where if you regularly share the page or share a post, you never know. You may be entered into a raffle for doing that, and that's basically my way of, you know, saying thank you for helping us. I'm going to help you, and basically I'd rather, you know, spend the money on a prize to give to a listener or a loyal follower than give it to Facebook. So that's the way I like to do things. So, for instance, just recently I made a post in Gecko Nation where I asked everybody if they would share the page, the Gecko Nation radio page. And, you know, a bunch of people commented on the post, but only like 5 or 6 people actually went that extra step and shared the page. So I kept track of who actually did that. And I'm putting their names in a raffle, and one of those people is going to win an egg candler that is also a pen and a stylus. So it's like a triple use. But in the past, I've given away free geckos, and you never know. In fact, I do this on all my pages. David Stein Geckos, Flexwatt Reptile Heatbait, and Gecko Nation Radio. So the next post that you like, share, or comment on, you never know. It may be the one that enters you into the next contest. And I do these things very randomly, very sporadically. And I just think it's fun to keep everybody on their toes, but it also encourages people to help the show and help me. And, you know, if you help me, I'm going to help you. It's kind of like it works good like that. So it's a way to give back and whatnot. Also, for tonight's special show, we're encouraging everyone to call in with their questions about crested geckos. And I know a lot of people are shy out there. We're very friendly. We don't bite. And we like for you guys to call in. So in the second part of the show, we're going to open up the phone lines, and we're also going to do a special thing for callers only. So Crest Essential is donating a bag, a 12-ounce bag of Pangea Crested Gecko Diet watermelon flavor. All right? And whoever calls in is going to be entered in a separate raffle to win that. All right? And also, very generously, they are for the entire week from this Sunday until next Sunday, if you order any kind of Crested Gecko product from their website, you're going to get 10% off by using a special code. It's GNR10, and GNR is all capitals. Okay, so GNR10 will get you 10% off, and it's good all week long. All right, folks? All right, that's the important announcements that I wanted to make. And, of course, Gecko Nation Radio would not be possible without its sponsors. So please, guys, check out our sponsors and take advantage. And make sure you mention Gecko Nation Radio, and they're going to take care of you.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Spein Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by Dale's Bearded Dragons is your one-stop source for any reptile supply products that you may need, from Exoterra, Zoomed, Rapashi, Repcal, Fluker, and much, much more, and all at 20 to 50% cheaper than your local pet store or big chain pet store. They are also the biggest reptile supply distributor at most of the Northeast Expos. Contact them directly online at dalesbeardeddragons.com or message me on Facebook and I'll put you in touch with the owner. Gecko Boa Reptiles is your source for the highest quality leopard gecko morphs and wild types, from white and yellows to radars, amazing tremper morphs, and rare subspecies. John is a world-class breeder and extremely knowledgeable. If you're looking for something truly special in geckos, contact John Scarborough at geckoboa.com and on Facebook. And if you're looking for quality food for your dubia roaches, crickets, mealworms, and superworms, look no further than MS2 Premium Insect Chow. Made with reptiles in mind, it contains no dog food, cat food, or chicken mash. Using only vegetable proteins and high-quality ingredients, MS2 Premium Insect Chow will have your feeders making a beeline for it. Contact mstent.weebly.com, or it can also be purchased at Rainbow Mealworms and AB Dragons. Rainbow Mealworms is the largest worm grower in the world and selling to the public since 1956. If you need the highest quality mealworms, superworms, and crickets for your pets, contact them at www.rainbowmealworms.net. ABDragons.com is your source for the highest quality dubia roaches, whether you're starting a colony of your own or just need feeders for your insect-eating herps. ABDragons.com can't be beat in quality or price. They are also a huge distributor of FlexWatt reptile heat tape and have very competitive pricing. Check out ABDragons.com online and on Facebook. Ohio Gecko is famous for amazing tangerines, snows, and other very unique leopard gecko projects. Thad also has some incredible fat tail morphs available from stingers to starbursts. Visit him online at ohiogecko.com and at expos in the Northeast. He is also the owner of geckoforums.net. Reptiles Express is the absolute best live animal shipping company with great low rates. Debbie is the queen of customer service and will make sure your precious cargo gets to where it needs to. They also have a wide array of shipping supplies from deli cups, snake bags, heat packs, and more. Visit reptilesexpress.com and become a member today. Supreme Gecko is a great source for crested geckos, day geckos, and other species, including micro geckos. Wally Kern is a top-notch breeder and gecko enthusiast. Visit supremegecko.com for his available animals and supplies. All right, everybody, we are back, and tonight I have a very special guest co-host, and she's very active in the group Gecko Nation, and she's just one of our favorite people. So let's go ahead and grab Miss Amanda Welliver. Good evening, Mandy. How are you tonight?
Good evening. Hi.
How are
I'm
you?
Doing great. How are you, Dave?
Oh, doing great. Looking forward to the show. What's going on? What's new with you?
Well, I collected two new clutches of fertile eggs today from my two little girls that are laying, my leopard geckos.
That's cool.
And I fed my day gecko honey off of my finger.
Nice.
That was my highlight of my day.
Wow, they're cool like that. So how's what's his name again? What's the little?
Sydney. Sydney.
Sydney, that's right.
He's nice named after Sydney Crosby.
Okay.
Oh,
okay,
yeah?
Yeah, I had an iguana when I was a kid that was named Sydney. It was a female, though, but nice. So is he becoming, like, really accustomed with you? Like, he's not afraid, he's not skittish, he just comes out and, you know, gets on your hand?
When
is that what happens?
When it comes to interacting, he loves to look at me. He likes to observe what I'm doing. He's in my kitchen. So whenever I am pouring a glass of fruity-smelling drink, he's always like, or even when I'm just in front of the tank, he will jump onto the glass where I am, or if he's already there, he will, like, kind of back himself off of the glass so he can look directly at me. I probably have over 2 dozen photos. Every time I'm like, oh, that's so cute. You're looking at me. Like, he's so photogenic. It's hilarious. But, yeah, he's something else.
It's like a sign of intelligence when they stare at you, right?
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of a bird for some reason. Just the way he'll, like, look at it, he'll kind of tilt his head and the way he, I don't know, something about the way they act and the way they move, and, like, he'll make a little sound sometimes if I touch him that almost reminds me of, like, a chirp. Like, I don't know.
Well, what do you think about crested geckos?
Well, I've recently become addicted to them. I don't own any yet, but it's a matter of time. I actually, for the longest time, I kind of had like a love-hate thing with Crested's. I was like, why is everybody in love with these things? Like, I just don't get it. They just didn't look cute to me. They didn't. And then the more I handled them at the shows and looked at all of the different varieties of colors, I think it was more the interaction, but I just have gotten bitten by the bug, and I have a feeling I'm at least going to have one in my collection of reptiles. But yeah, I'm can't actually stop thinking about the one that I was holding at the expo just recently. So if he's still available, I have a feeling I may end up with a Cresty for sure.
That's awesome. So Mandy, where do we send people that are basically gecko addicts like us? Where's the best place for them to go?
Gecko addicts. Well, I've sent all my gecko addicts to our Gecko Nation Facebook page, but also I know a good place is some of the forums. I believe there's a particular one that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Which one is it?
Oh, that would be Gecko Forums.
Oh, yeah. Booyah. Check this out, everybody.
Did you know that since 2006, there's been a treasure trove of history and information on leopard geckos and other species? Well, Gecko Forums is the most extensive database of leopard gecko history on the web right now. Take a look and delve into the past, present, and future of this great community. The biggest contributors, breeders, and hobbyists have left their mark there. Now it's your turn. Look, learn, and post away. Need a place to post animals for sale? Look no further. Visit geckoforums.net and become a member today. Gecko Nation Radio is proud to be the official radio show associated with Gecko Forums.
Woo-hoo. Yes, we are. We are totally proud. And while we're at it, I just want to say hello to all of the awesome people that are in our chat room right now. We have Angela. We have Brooke. We have
Woo-hoo!
Elsa. We have Manda, of course. We have Marcy. I hope Marcy is doing better. Marcy's been in and out of the hospital.
Hi, Marcy.
We love you, Marcy. Hang in there. Hope you're better. We got Sean from Heavy Duty Reptiles. We have Ty Malave, Steve Barker, and the mysterious soft kitty who says they're a ghost. I'm still trying to figure out who that is. But but yeah, all right. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And I don't think we should waste any more time. I'm going to go ahead and bring on our guest for tonight, which is Danny Schaefer and Buddy Della Torre. So here you guys are. Danny Schaefer and Buddy, how are you guys tonight?
How you guys doing?
Hey, Dave, what's up?
Yeah, good
Hi.
To have you. Thanks for coming on.
How you doing, Amanda?
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Thanks for tuning in. I mean, thanks for coming on tonight, guys. We're looking forward to this
we
show.
Are
and.
Too.
Awesome. You know, just like Mandy was saying, yeah, I've kind of, over the years, have, like, a strange thing for Cresties. I like them. I admire them. I can totally get why people are into them, and I just never really took the plunge, but I think they're starting to grow on people. They're growing on Mandy. They're even growing on me a bit. What is it that's so special about these crested geckos?
I definitely feel like the reason people like crested geckos so much is mainly the fact that the care for them is not, like, anything crazy. You know, bearded dragons and stuff can go price-wise pretty high. Crested geckos aren't exactly going to empty out your wallet. The care for them is mm-hmm. relatively easy. They have great colors. They feel soft on your hands, and they're just a great animal to watch. That's what people love about them so much.
Interesting. Yeah, they definitely do feel really cool compared to other species. I bet you that's
oh yeah, definitely.
Like velvet.
Right, velvet. That's right. That's exactly what it is. They do tend to be a little jumpy though. They jump around a lot, right?
Babies tend to be a little more jumpy than adults. Handling a few times a week, I've seen that's the best way to kind of stop them from being so jumpy. But you know, mm-hmm. it's just like anything. People have different personalities. So do the crested geckos. Some will be jumpy. Some will be tame as anything.
Ah, that's cool. So one of the things
Dumb
that I was
jump on your face.
The, right? Before we jump
yep.
into the news segment, I wanted to tell us like what got you guys started in reptiles. How did you guys get started into reptiles?
Oh, this is always one of my favorite questions, Dave, because me and Buddy go a long time back. A few years ago, I actually got interested in reptiles, and I went to a reptile show, and I met Buddy, and we worked for Dale's Bearded Dragon together. And eventually, we're coming back from a New Hampshire show about a month ago, and an idea just came to us that, you know, we've been collecting crested geckos for a long time. Why don't we put our collection together and make a crested business where, you know, we can just share the genetics that our geckos have to the world and, you know, really just expand on a line we wanted to call our own.
Nice. That's really cool. So, and what is it in particular that made you decide to start a business from your hobby and your passion?
Buddy's going to go ahead and answer this one.
Well, Dave,
okay.
we wanted to have a lot of cresties together, but it wasn't really cost efficient to just have to have me come down and take care of them. So we decided we'll breed them, we'll sell them, and then we'll split the money from it so that we can hang out all the time, have tons of crested geckos, and make money.
Nice. Well, it's always good to be able to make an income on something that you like. And part of being
yeah.
a breeder is basically finding ways to offset your own costs. I mean, you know, once you start breeding, it's like, you can't hold on to every single baby, and the cost of producing and caring and feeding for a large collection just keeps going up and up and up. So eventually you're kind of almost forced into making somewhat of a business out of it. So
business
I think,
out of it, yeah.
Yeah, so
like,
I think it's a good thing.
It's not
and
just
that's
the money,
what a lot
though.
Of people are doing.
It's not just the money, though. It's that we love Cresties, and we just want to have a ton of them. And we just want to get our lines out there and share what we have to the world.
That's cool. And I'm sure you guys are investing in really good stuff, good quality animals. I know you
yeah.
guys always look for great, great animals.
Yeah.
We posted
yeah,
some
definitely.
Pictures. Mm-hmm. We posted some pictures that you guys can see. It's on the Gecko Nation, well, the Blog Talk site right now, the slideshow. So check out some of these amazing, amazing geckos. I'm going to give the... Give the reins over to Mandy for a bit. Go ahead, Mandy. Ask these guys some questions about Cresties.
All righty. Well, where to start? So, how many Cresties do you guys have in your collection currently?
Right now, we actually have about 20 breeders. We have 15 females and 5 males that me and Buddy just pretty much split because we had so many, and I wanted to do the crested geckos, and he was going to focus on the supply. So we have about 20 breeders right now and a few babies that are growing up.
Nice. And
cool.
Where do you guys have them in, set up in racks, or how do you keep so many geckos, how many cresties, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we have them all in a rack in Danny's room. We keep them all in good-sized bins, big enough, like, 6 inches high by, like, 18 inches, basically Rubbermaids. And we have a lot of ventilation in the top, so the humidity levels stay right. And we have one female in each bin, and then we have males in their own setups, like, bigger bins. And then
Nice. We
just have them all still in the rack.
Oh, that's cool. All right, so guys, we're going to go ahead and jump into the news segment, and then once we get done with the news, we're going to get into the full interview with you. And basically, we're going to figure out how to care for them. We're going to ask you guys how you can effectively breed them, and basically cover everything that a new person to crested geckos would need to know. In fact, myself and Mandy are probably going to be new crested gecko owners soon, so this is going to be helpful even to us. So hang tight. I'm going to go ahead and bring on our awesome news anchor.
Good evening, Gekkonians.
There he is.
Hey. How you guys
What's up,
doing?
Steve? Good.
Not too much. Hatched out. Not great.
I've
been
cold,
sick all weekend. Yeah. But I hatched out a couple of gargoyles this morning, so I was pretty happy about that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We had a striped and a reticulated out of there.
That's
awesome. So that's cool.
Nice. Hopefully you got some good news for us tonight.
Yeah, a little bit. This first story
is strange. Oh, sorry, guys. I was going to say, is it strange that I think about, like, being excited to hear the news, and I'll come up with, like, my own, like, oh, I should tell him this one. This would be a funny made-up story. Like, I don't know.
Help me out.
I've thought of some pretty crazy ones. I'm sure people would be like, oh, that's totally false.
But, yeah, I'd appreciate the help.
Hey, anytime. Right, I'll run them by you at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, PM them.
Definitely.
Nice.
All right.
Our first story is absolutely horrible.
God.
Yeah. You're not going to even believe it. An Ohio couple was convicted Friday of enslaving a mentally disabled woman for 2 years through intimidation, abuse, and threats that they would harm her 5-year-old daughter. Prosecutors said the couple kept the woman and her daughter in a damp, dark basement with a lock on the door and no bathroom. They also threatened both with a python and pit bulls and forced the woman to shop, cook, clean, and other chores, and forced her to engage in sexual acts.
Oh, my God. Wow. I heard about this story. Crazy.
This is just, yeah. It is. They were convicted on charges that included forced labor conspiracy with a kidnapping specification, and they could be sentenced to as much as life in prison. And this is messed up. They got, you know, they obviously kidnapped a lady, but both were found not guilty of stealing the woman's government benefits.
Oh, my God. There is no jail. There's no sentence that's long enough for people like this. You know what I mean?
No.
I have, wasn't there a similar case about this? They kept 3 girls in a house or something, and they found them. Like, they were gone for, 5 years or something, right? You guys hear about that?
Yeah, that happened a while back.
Yeah, that was
a little different, though, yeah. And they weren't even big pythons. They were small boas and pythons that they would... But this woman was obviously, you know, she had mental issues, so she was very scared of the snakes. And it's just a shame that they would, you know, use the animals that way and use another person, which is terrible. I hope they get the maximum of whatever. But,
interesting. They should get the life, for sure.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. And probably the most frequent story I came across this week was... An olive python was caught on camera devouring a Johnston's crocodile on the shores of an Australian lake. And both those species are native to Australia. So it's a normal thing. They're native. So.
I saw that on Facebook. I didn't know if that was true or not, but I guess it was.
Yeah, the pictures are pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was fake, honestly.
Yeah.
Wow.
That leads us into Ohio. A Westchester man is suing the Ohio Department of Agriculture over the state's new exotic and dangerous animal laws. Arrow Reptile Rescue has been involved in the rescue of 30 to 40 alligators a year. The alligators were routinely sent to licensed facilities in Florida, but no more. According to the new laws, in late December, officials at the Ohio Department of Agriculture notified rescue owner that Arrowhead was no longer exempt from their regulations. The owner says, if they read the law, it says, if we have certain permits, we're exempt from the law. We have those permits. We believe we should be exempt from the law, and that's what we're asking the courts to interpret. So they want to be, because they have all the required permits to keep their animals, they mm-hmm. should be able to keep them. Mm-hmm. And I agree, and what really upsets me about this is people who don't have those permits are going to have their animals. But you know, this rescue is going by the law and everything, trying to help, and they're going to take them. So that's kind of wrong.
Unbelievable.
You know, the people who are breaking the law are going to get away with it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Oh, man. There's so many mixed up things in this in our legal system. Really, really messed up.
So a while back, we heard about I think it was a boa constrictor was found in a couch. I don't know if you remember that a while back.
Mm-hmm.
A Swedish pet store helped a local woman in Sweden chased a slithering reptile across her apartment before it hid inside a speaker. After calling the police, who failed to free the unwanted house guest, she took the speaker to the local aquarium. Delicately, and with the help of a dead mouse, staff managed to entice the snake out of its hiding spot and grabbed it and got it out of the speaker.
Wow.
So in a while,
that's crazy.
It was probably 6 months ago, a ball python was in a washer or, no, in an oven.
Oven.
Yeah.
Oh,
oven.
Yeah, I heard
so. They're just turning up in weird places. And sticking with snakes, an 8-foot boa was found in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, near a McDonald's trash dumpster. Authorities were notified, and the snake was captured. So that's an 8-foot boa constrictor, which mm-hmm. we just, you know, recently they're trying to include the boa constrictor on the ban list or on the Lacey Act.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, so that was going
to happen. Oh, yeah. And staying in Florida, this is not news, at least not to me, and I'm just going to read the title. Tegu lizards have invaded South Florida. They've been there a long time, so it's not really news. But
right.
But I found that one.
Let me just jump in for a second. While I was doing the show with Herpentime, one of their sponsors on Herpentime is Tegus Only. And what tegusonly.com does is he goes out and captures these wild tegus, thus protecting the native wildlife, but also helping the invasive tegus get out of, you know, the wild in Florida. And then he rehomes them. So if anybody out there would like to, you know, give a forever home to a tegu in need, so to speak, contact tegusonly.com. And there's an adoption fee, of course, but you'll be, if you want a really nice tegu, you know, instead of going to buy one from the next swap meet or the next show, why don't you adopt one? And he's also found some unique tegus that are they have this unique coloration. So basically, when they've adapted to the surroundings in Florida, they've gained these extra colors, this orange coloration. You'll see what I'm talking about. So visit the site tegusonly.com. I'm thinking about grabbing and giving a home to an adult tegu because I often have a lot of snakes. These ball pythons never like to eat, so I wind up having these extra rodents. And instead of wasting them, I'm thinking of getting myself a tegu that I can have here and help the tegu and also have a living garbage disposal for a bunch of the food here.
Disposal.
Yeah.
What would you normally do with the mice if you didn't? You didn't.
Well, I'd have to flush them and throw them away. I mean, you can't really refreeze them, right? I mean,
yeah, so, I wouldn't. I wouldn't rebreed them.
I was thinking you were talking about live mice, and that's why I was very confused. For
no, no, I don't need anything live here. No.
Yeah, I was just thinking I always use frozen mice with my my snakes. It's just easier.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Steve.
I'm the opposite. I got the snake to eat the mice because I already bred the mice.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yep.
Bull pythons never like to eat.
Yeah, and then I've got the too many mice, a snake that won't eat all the mice, so now maybe I should get a tegu.
Right, that's the thing.
That's answering my question.
But according to this article, they are cold-blooded killers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah, and they're eating their way through the Everglades.
Unbelievable.
Oh.
That'd be the next sci-fi movie.
Right.
Tegu versus the Burmese python. All right, and I don't know how many people are Walking Dead fans.
Oh, me.
Oh, yeah.
Woo.
Yeah.
Who isn't?
Oh, calm down. Daryl did not kill a real rattlesnake in The Walking Dead. Last week.
Yeah, I thought about that.
Daryl caught and killed a rattlesnake to eat. And it was not real. So.
Probably did a really good job.
Calm down. It was not real.
The only real rattlesnakes being killed this weekend are the ones in the Sweetwater Roundup, unfortunately. But we're all trying to put an end to that whole thing. So hopefully within the next 5 years, those roundups will be abolished completely. That's what they're hoping to do.
If there's a zombie apocalypse and all I've got to eat is rattlesnakes, I'm going to be eating me some rattlesnakes. So.
Yeah.
All right, so our next story, a photo circulating on social media claims there's a snow snake that causes blood to freeze. And it has several people in Pennsylvania and Ohio. Dave, have you seen the snake?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay, I'm just checking. I don't know.
I have.
Who believes these stories?
People do believe them.
I know. And the picture that's going around is a rubber snake that my daughter happens to have. That's the picture that's going around the story.
Oh, man.
Yeah. All right. And the best story of the night. A seventh grader named Isla Hickman is looking for some likes in her crusade to name the Idaho giant salamander as the official Idaho state amphibian. Keep in mind, this is a seventh grader who's trying to get this done. She's over 400 likes, and her Facebook page is Idaho Giant Salamander for State Amphibian is her Facebook page. And like I said, it's a seventh grader that's trying to get this bill in and voted on. So I think that's cool that, you know, the young kids are doing this.
Repeat the link again, the page again, Steve. What is it?
The page is Idaho Giant Salamander for State Amphibian. And I'll post that in the Gecko Nation Radio Facebook page, too. But
okay,
I just think that's cool, you know.
I found it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That sounds like a cool thing. I'll like it.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll post it. I got it right here, Steve. I'll post it for you.
All right, cool. So that was our last story. So I'll give you the recap.
Beat me to it. All right. Chad's fair.
All right. So one of the stories is fake, and here's the recap. Ohio couple used python and pit bulls to enslave a woman. Reptile death match, snake devours crocodile. Dangerous animal debate, local man sues. Woman finds python in speaker. 8-foot boa found in Fort Lauderdale. Tegus invade South Florida. Calm down, Daryl did not kill a real rattlesnake. Snow snake is a hoax. Idaho giant salamander for state amphibian.
All right, ladies first. You're first, Mandy.
All right. I'm going to go with the 8-foot boa in McDonald's dumpster or whatever it was in by McDonald's.
All right. Let's see what people in the group are saying. Snake is a face, no snake. 8-foot boa. Okay. What do you guys think, Buddy and Danny? Whoever wants to go first.
Me and Buddy actually have conflicting opinions. I think it's the enslaved story, but I don't know. Buddy thinks
it's got to be that snow snake. That's not real.
Okay. Yeah. Unfortunately, Steve wouldn't joke about the first story. That's definitely true.
I wish it was a false.
I know. I wish it was the full story. All right, I'm going to go with...
There's no way this is going to be a joke.
I know. No. I'm going to go with the snake in the speaker, I think, because I know the first part of the story is true. I think, but Steve likes to add on to some of these stories every once in a while. So I'm thinking that the snake didn't go into the speaker and they didn't really actually have to lure it out. I'm going to go with that. But, everybody in the chat room's hoping the first story is fake, of course, yes, but a lot of people are saying the snow snake. I think the snow snake is real. The people are really believing that. All right. So, Steve, what is the false story?
The false story is the 8-foot boa found in Fort Lauderdale is
false. Woo!
Really?
Amanda wins.
Yeah. And Dave, the woman finds python and speaker, they have photos. They took photos as they got the python out. So
oh my gosh.
Check that out, yeah.
I
wish the first story was false. I wish that first story was.
Yeah, I apologize for that.
No, it's no big deal. It's just what it is. It's a shame. All right. Well, I'm hearing the special sound that is...
Now, a moment in Herp history. On August 24th, 1950, in Weewaka, Oklahoma, hopefully I'm saying that right, G.W. Hall, who was a zookeeper, created a hoax capture of a 26-foot snake and confessed the following day to authorities. It was all done to promote the exhibition of the snake. So he faked a loose snake and capture.
Oh boy.
And it's August 24th, 1950.
Well, they were using snakes and reptiles back then for shock value, and nothing's changed today.
No. Nope.
They're still using them. Alright. Interesting. So what's going on in your collection, Steve?
Not a whole lot. My dubias are breeding like crazy, which is good because my mealworms have kind of slowed down a little. So, so the geckos.
You have any albino dubias?
Oh yeah, I got a bunch of them.
Oh jeez.
I didn't know that. I had no idea.
I told Steve that the albinos were worth $25 a piece, and he didn't know. And I had to let him in that those fell for it.
I think you got it. It's an albino.
That's funny.
totally fell for it.
It happens. Wow. But you're going to be producing some amazing geckos this season, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to next season once I got a bunch of them growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I think this week is going to be good weather for shipping. So if you want me to send out that bandit that comes for me, I'm ready to do it.
Oh, all right, cool, cool.
Yeah, just let me know.
All right, yeah. I still got your bumblebee too.
Cool. I'm ready whenever you are.
All right, cool.
All right.
You can mix
right,
up
Steve,
his address with mine. I'd have no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got actually just before you go, Steve, just so everybody knows, he's got a couple really nice animals for sale on his page. He's got the Las Vegas patternless males and a nice albino bull, right?
Yeah, yeah. I still have a lesser. I've got a bunch of Las Vegas albinos that are all hat patternless. I think I still have a gargoyle on there too.
Okay, cool.
I love gargoyles.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
all right,
they look like little dinosaurs to me.
They're like the cousin of Rusty.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Cool. Thank you very much, Steve, and we'll see you next week. Thanks again for everything.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
All right, give out your information.
Check me out on Facebook and YouTube under BC Barker Creations.
All right, take care. Feel better, Steve.
Thanks,
Steve.
Have a good night, everybody.
All right, okay. Wow, we're already 46 minutes into the show, and I want to get into our interview with Danny and Buddy. And Amanda and I decided that we want to start out the interview with you guys with husbandry. So basically, people can learn how to care for Cresteds. And then after we talk about husbandry, we'll talk about breeding. So I think the first question towards in the husbandry area would be, so if somebody's, you know, deciding to get their first crested gecko or their first pair of crested geckos, how should they keep them, guys?
We recommend that you do keep crested geckos kind of in solitude unless you're going to breed them. For usually just a normal gecko, if you're not breeding and you want it to be for, like, visual purposes, and, you know, I would use a nice ExoTerra 12x18 tank. It's a perfect setup for the rest of their life, and, you know, you have enough room for them to climb and stuff. Because crested geckos, they climb up. They're arboreal. So you don't want, like, a 10-gallon tank is okay. Like, you can use it, but it's not recommended. You kind of want a taller tank when it comes to crested geckos.
Okay.
Now, would
All
you
right.
say that it would be best to use a smaller enclosure than the, what was it, the 12x18? Would you say, like, for the first couple months to use something even smaller than that? Or would a newborn hatchling be okay in something that big?
You know, when it comes to hatchlings, I've always done the same thing. I always purchase Critter Keepers, the minis, and it's perfect for hatchlings. And,
right.
then, you know, at 3-4 months in, because the best thing about it is it's so small. Food is very easy to come by. If a tank is too
right.
big, a little crested gecko may not necessarily be able to find it. That's not always the case, but I have seen that happen where a big tank has unfortunately killed a crested gecko because the person wasn't giving the food in a spot that the crested gecko could get it. So it is always best for a little, a smaller closure for a hatchling to early juvenile. But once he gets, you know, about 7-8 months old, there's no problem putting him into a 12 to 18 that we recommend.
Okay.
So what about temperature now? You know, with leopard geckos, we have to have the heater, you know, the heat going. We have to have a 90-degree warm spot, 80-degree cool spot. With crested geckos, it's completely different. What do you think,
yeah,
guys? What do we do for these cresties?
With cresties, you actually don't need any heat at all. Like, the hottest they can go is 85 degrees, but you can keep them room temperature. They don't need any heat at all, which is one nice thing about them. 85
what if your
really
house is really cold?
Then if it gets below, like, 68, 65, especially at night, we always recommend a small little nighttime heat emitter, just a small one, like 25, 26 watts, that's not going to create any light because they are nocturnal at nighttime, so they can see all the darker colors, and they're more active, so you wouldn't want to disturb them.
Okay, so, and a heat emitter is like, it looks like a light bulb, but it's not, right?
Yeah, it just creates heat.
Okay. All right.
So now,
go ahead, Mandy.
With my house, It's literally 72. Like, my house is amazing as far as heat, but it keeps almost perfectly at 72 degrees all
the
time.
Yeah, that's perfect.
In the summer, we have the air conditioner on, and we literally have the power saver where it adjusts. It's 70 to 72 degrees all the time. So that would be, like, ideally perfect then?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Awesome.
Now, Danny mentioned that the ExoTerras are great. I just got a text message from someone reminding me, where is the best place to get ExoTerras from?
Now, here's the thing. If you go to a pet store to buy any type of item, you know, being at any reptile supply, you're going to pay a lot more than you would by going to a reptile show or ordering online. We do have it at CrestyCentral.com. We have but tanks are a little hard to ship, so the better place to go is usually reptile shows. You'll get a better deal on it because not everybody will ship tanks. We actually do have some ExoTerras available at reptile shows currently.
Okay, and if you're at a particular reptile show in the Northeast, who are the best people to buy these items from?
if you email us in the meantime, or before a show, we'll bring it for you. But you could go to Dale's Bearded Dragons for it.
Okay. All right. So yeah. Dale's Bearded Dragons is okay, right?
Yep. We're pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. Of course, awesome. Of course, Mario's texting me to remind you guys to make sure we get that plug-in.
Oh,
of course,
yeah,
Dale's Bearded Dragons is a sponsor.
It's kind of funny because Dale's Bearded Dragons, we work for Dale's Bearded Dragons, so we're Crusty Central, so it's kind of funny because it's kind of like,
We're both actually wearing the DVD hoodie right now.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
I got to get one of those.
ExoTerra from
We actually just made a few Crusty Central hoodies that are coming in soon, so we're going to start rocking Crusty Central. The DVD will always be the start, though, so respect to Dale's Bearded Dragons.
Right.
Okay. Now, as far as cage furnishings, guys, these Crusty, they like to climb and everything. So what are the essential things that are needed inside the cage for a Crusty?
Well, to start off, one of the most important, I would say, is definitely substrate. For babies, I always use paper towel. Actually, for adults, I even use paper towel. It's the cleanest, cheapest, and easiest to, you know, to clean. The thing about it is that it's not loose, like EcoEarth and stuff. I never recommend any type of loose substrate for babies. Adults, you can use like a loose substrate, but it's not recommended, especially if you want to feed insects. When it comes to the tank, it's always good to have a barrage of different fake plants. You can use live too, but it's kind of hard sometimes to care for. A few fake plants, a stick that goes diagonal throughout the length of the tank or tub, whatever you're using. And, you know, that's really all you need. That's the thing about them is they're, you know, as long as you have a lot of cover for them, they're good to go.
Nice. Okay, cool. All right, go ahead, Mandy, your turn.
As far as plants, if you were to use actual live plants, is there any type of plants that you would recommend and any that you wouldn't?
I recommend using any type of ferns because they've got strong leaves. Philodendron work good too. And I wouldn't really recommend any like flowers because they're flimsy, like small little grasses. But bromeliads work also, and they're really colorful.
Nice.
Will they try to eat any of these plants?
What'd you say, Dave?
Will they try to eat any of these plants?
No, they won't try to eat the plants, but they will actually try and dig in the dirt if it's a female and she's been bred. She'll dig in the dirt and make a huge mess and uproot the plant. So that's why we don't use. That's why we don't use live.
Okay. Good to know.
All right. What about food? What's the best thing to feed these guys? What is their diet like?
Now, another huge thing about crested geckos and why they're so popular in the reptile community is probably because of the fact that they do not eat insects. Other reptiles, you can find yourself spending, you know, and buying thousands of crickets a month easily. But crested geckos, they don't even need predominant insects. They need this diet. It's called crested gecko diet. It's a powder, and you mix it with water. And basically, you know, you keep it in your refrigerator,
you fill up a Gatorade cap or a small bottle cap, depending on how big your gecko is, and every two nights you change it out. No insects, no mess, no crickets getting loose in your house. Simple as that, and that's why they're such a big fan favorite.
Hmm. Nice.
They won't eat any insects?
No. They will eat insects. Our schedule is we do Monday, Tuesday crested gecko diet, and then we do Thursday, Friday crested gecko diet, and then Saturday is when we give crickets. Crested geckos can eat two types of insects, crickets or dubia roaches. They can eat superworms and mealworms. I avoid. Other people may do other things, but I avoid mealworms and superworms. Dubias are good too, but they seem to have more of an interest in crickets, and that's what we've seen they grow the biggest on, is especially when you feed them crickets, and they like the crickets preferable over the dubia roaches.
Okay, interesting.
Thanks.
Okay. What else are going to ask you? Well, as far as keeping them, now, a lot of times we see, when I'm at the shows, I see crested geckos that have no tails, and people call them frog butts. What is actually happening when a crested gecko loses its tail? Why do they drop their tails? Do their tails grow back? And how can one prevent that from happening?
All right, well, just a quick overview real quick. So frog butt basically is just simply the crested gecko lost its tail. Some people may be confused wondering what frog butt is. To prevent that, the best thing I've realized is a lot of people think that they drop their tails very easily, like very, very easily with handling-wise I'm talking about.
Right.
That's not necessarily true. You can, if you have a little kid or something, they accidentally grab the tail, it's not just going to fall off. You know, if you're doing like a hard pinch or a hard grab, that could happen. But it's not always the case. I mean, I've never had it happen to me in my hands at all, even with little babies. Loud noises can also be a reason. If you're there in a room where a door is slammed, I've seen geckos drop their tails that way. But other than that, it's not like they're going to drop their tail. It mostly happens in breeding. Breeding is a number one reason why they drop their tails, usually.
Okay. So is it seen more in females than males? What do you notice?
That's a good point. It probably is. It usually is a lot more females without tails, because being the fact that the breeding process with them is, really the males can be very aggressive. So tail dropping is
right.
a very common sign. What you'll notice is their tail will start to kind of wag, like a surrendering kind of thing, like a very slow wag back and forth, and that's a sign of tail dropping. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes they won't actually drop the tail, but that is one of the first signs if they will drop their tail. I've noticed that also.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Interesting. What do you got, Mandy?
My question was as far as, the humidity. Is there any particular methods that you guys, a ritual as far as spraying them down or misting or whatever you... Do you recommend more of, like, a fogger set on a timer, or just that? I was wondering about how to keep them humid but not too humid.
We recommend you spray them with a sprayer once in the morning and then let the humidity drop, and then once at night so that it spikes up again and then starts to slowly drop again. And that's because in the wild it rains in the morning and then at night again.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to keep the rhythm like that, like with nature.
Nice. And do you have any issues with keeping, the tubs that don't have any substrate humid, to hold enough humidity? I just didn't know with having paper towels if that becomes, an issue at all.
Paper towels actually stay wet pretty well. So
okay.
We spray them once in the morning. They are pretty wet once we spray them. And then throughout the day, they slowly give off humidity, which helps with the whole curve of the humidity that I was saying before.
Nice.
And then Danny also wants.
I just want to add something really quick. Another big problem with crested geckos is mildew is actually a very big problem. See, what happens is people will have the crested gecko diet, or they'll spray it too much, and there'll be there will not be proper airflow in the enclosures. And mildew is like a spider webby looking thing. For people who don't know what it is, I'm probably sure you guys are reptile people. You're definitely familiar with it. And the really good way that we've realized to prevent that is just, making a good amount of airflow in the enclosure. Because I'm talking, drilling holes in tubs.
if you're using a tank, obviously it has the screen top already. And if a problem with tanks is that you don't have enough humidity, it's a very easy method to just take some Saran wrap and kind of block the top off a little bit. Don't be worried about them suffocating. They'll be fine. Just, you know, it helps the humidity raise up.
Okay.
Also, monsoons work very well. Monsoons are a very good thing that also help keep their humidity up. And if you want to check those out, we do have those on our website. And it really helps keeping the humidity up. And it can be accommodated with the fogger, too.
Okay, cool. All right. Everybody, we are at the halfway point. And now I'm going to take a quick break, but I want everyone to know that in the second half of the show, we are opening the phone lines for the callers. And I see that there's some people already in the call queue. If you're listening in the call queue, chances are I'm going to take your call. So just get ready. And also, people that call in are all going to be entered into a raffle. And one of those lucky callers is going to receive a 12-ounce bag of Pangea Cresta Gecko Diet, the watermelon flavor. And that is graciously donated by Cresta Essential. So, yeah. And if you don't have a Cresta and you win a bag of Cresta, you know, if you win the bag of Cresta food,
maybe
it'll give you an incentive.
Maybe not that bad.
It's going to give you an incentive to go buy a Cresta Gecko. So you have to have something that's going to eat the food. Right.
Definitely.
All right. So everybody hang tight. We will be right back. And in the second half, we're going to get into breeding and morphs and all that good stuff. So hang tight, everyone.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David's Fine Geckos creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by Dale's Bearded Dragons is your one-stop source for any reptile supply products that you may need, from Exoterra, Zoomed, Rapashi, Repcal, Fluker, and much, much more, and all at 20 to 50% cheaper than your local pet store or big chain pet store. They are also the biggest reptile supply distributor at most of the Northeast Expos. Contact them directly online at dalesbeardeddragons.com or message me on Facebook and I'll put you in touch with the owner. Gecko Boa Reptiles is your source for the highest quality leopard gecko morphs and wild types, from white and yellows to radars, amazing tremper morphs, and rare subspecies. John is a world-class breeder and extremely knowledgeable. If you're looking for something truly special in geckos, contact John Scarborough at geckoboa.com and on Facebook. And if you're looking for quality food for your dubia roaches, crickets, mealworms, and superworms, look no further than MS2 Premium Insect Chow. Made with reptiles in mind, it contains no dog food, cat food, or chicken mash. Using only vegetable proteins and high-quality ingredients, MS2 Premium Insect Chow will have your feeders making a beeline for it. Contact ms2ent.weebly.com, or it can also be purchased at Rainbow Mealworms and AB Dragons. Rainbow Mealworms is the largest worm grower in the world and selling to the public since 1956. If you need the highest quality mealworms, superworms, and crickets for your pets, contact them at www.rainbowmealworms.net. abdragons.com is your source for the highest quality dubia roaches, whether you're starting a colony of your own or just need feeders for your insect-eating herps. abdragons.com can't be beat in quality or price. They are also a huge distributor of FlexWatt reptile heat tape and have very competitive pricing. Check out abdragons.com online and on Facebook. Supreme Gecko is a great source for crested geckos, day geckos, and other species, including microgeckos. Wally Kern is a top-notch breeder and gecko enthusiast. Visit supremegecko.com for his available animals and supplies. Reptiles Express is the absolute best live animal shipping company with great low rates. Debbie is the queen of customer service and will make sure your precious cargo gets to where it needs to. They also have a wide array of shipping supplies from deli cups, snake bags, heat packs, and more. Visit reptilesexpress.com and become a member today. Ohio Gecko is famous for amazing tangerines, snows, and other very unique leopard gecko projects. Thad also has some incredible fat tail morphs available from stingers to starbursts. Visit him online at ohiogecko.com and at Expos in the Northeast. He is also the owner of geckoforums.net.
Okay, everybody, we are back. And I want to just remind everyone to take advantage of our sponsors. Our sponsors love to take care of Gecko Nation Radio listeners. So contact any of our sponsors and mention the show. All right, and just off the top of my head, I know that AD Dragons gives 5% off all your orders just by typing in the word gecko at checkout. And, all right, what else did I want to mention? I think that's it for now, but I want to get into the second part of the show here with we're going to get into breeding and morphs and stuff, but I'm going to let Mandy start off this hour. Go ahead, Mandy.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
No problem.
Danny and Buddy, I got one more question before we go into the breeding questions that I have. As far as I know, I'm big on leopard geckos. I know a lot more about them than I think any other species. I know how they get the pockets that they can get around their armpits. Is there anything similar that crested geckos get that would be like where they store their calcium or something like that that you can check?
Oh, my bad. Hold on, I got to unmute them. My fault. I'm sorry, guys. Go ahead.
I'm like, I thought I stumped him, man.
actually, crested geckos have more of it's more internal with them than it is, like, visible. Like, leopard geckos have the calcium sockets under their armpits, and they also have kind of fat tails. It's not like that with crested geckos. It's a lot more internal than it is external.
Okay. I actually was doing a little bit of research before the show. Have you ever heard of in their mouths that they have two, like, little pockets? You can actually, if you can get them to open their mouths. I didn't read too far into it, but it was saying that you can check under, like, it's on the roof of their mouth. You can actually check, and it will be larger if they've got more calcium in their system. I thought that was really interesting.
No, you are correct, actually. It's a little harder to tell with some. It's more obvious in some geckos than it is in other, but I can't even believe I forgot that because it is right. I have heard of that. But, no, it is a little more visible in some geckos that are taking in more calcium. See, a lot of people just kind of just give Rapashi or Pangea, crested gecko diet, which is fine. But if you're given, like, you know, some crickets with a little more calcium in it, those are a little more visible than in others.
Nice.
Okay, cool. All right, you know, why don't we take a phone call? We got a bunch of people lined up here. I'm going to grab the caller from the 678 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hello?
Caller, are you there? Hey, caller, how are you?
Hi. I'm doing okay. How are you?
Good. What's your question tonight?
Well, I have one crested gecko that I got from a pet store, and they fed it mealworms. Now, I'm not sure how I should go about switching it off mealworms to a diet because it's a little bit inconvenient.
Okay. So you want to switch it?
Yeah.
I mean, you really shouldn't have a problem switching it. I mean, if they fed it mealworms, that's honestly kind of a shame on them because, you know, that should not be what a crested gecko is strictly eating. The crested geckos, if, you know, they can smell pretty good. If they smell the Rapashi Pangea crested gecko food, they should have, if they're hungry, they'll go and eat it. Like, I don't think you'll have a problem where you won't be able to switch. If you're looking to get their crested gecko diet, just give it in, if it's, you know, is it a baby or is it an adult?
Sub-adult.
Or is it like a juvenile? Is it like kind of in the middle?
Yeah, in the middle.
In the middle? Oh, yeah, then, I mean, it's still growing. You know, it's just, yeah, just put in some crested gecko food. We have it on our website if you're looking to get it. You know, just put it in the enclosure, and he should have no problem getting over. You know, if you see that he doesn't even, he's not even licking it because he's just, you know, so on insects, you know, what you could try doing is giving some crickets. And, you know, at least that's a little more helpful to him than giving him mealworms. So, I mean, you know, you don't want to do strictly crickets, but it's better that he's eating crickets than mealworms. But definitely try to get him into the crest gecko diet just simply by offering it to him, and you should have no problem with that.
All right, thank you. Is there a specific brand that you recommend?
Oh, there's actually two major brands, Repashi and Pangea. Whatever, they're pretty much both equally the same thing. One just made by a different. There have, you know, whatever one you want to go with is really your choice. Price-wise, they're pretty much the same, too. If you want to check it out, you can go on our website, CrestyCentral.com. We have both Pangea and Repashi, and you can choose which one you like better. They come in a few different ounces, and, you know, but pretty much geckos will eat both of them. I've used Pangea, I've used Repashi, and my geckos will kill the whole Gatorade cap of full of food. So they're both pretty good. You shouldn't really have a problem. But those are the main two I would stick with, truthfully, Repashi and Pangea.
Okay. What's your name, caller?
Is there any...
Soft Kitty.
Soft Kitty, okay.
Soft Kitty, warm kitty.
Well, if we're going to be sending you, if you wind up winning, I'm going to need to know your name for shipping. So at that point, you're going to have to give it up. So.
Okay.
Oh, before we let Soft Kitty go, okay. Is there any actual particular flavor that the crested that's never had it might find irresistible?
It does. Honestly, like, just like you wouldn't want to eat pizza every day, crested geckos don't really want the same flavor of food their whole life, so I kind of just change it up every few months. But no, preferably they'll eat, you know, there's the original flavor, there's watermelon. Pangea has watermelon and papaya mango flavor, and Repashi has, like, peach and but original is usually the one that's sold, and they'll still eat it. So, I mean, if they're eating the original flavor that doesn't even have, like, a name, I'm sure they'll eat mango and peach, and they like sweet things. So anything that smells sweet, to them, they'll eat.
All right.
I just have the regular one.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
All right. I'd like to just jump in and maybe offer a suggestion. And, you know, Danny and Buddy, you tell me if this may work. If somebody like him is trying to get his gecko off of the mealworms, onto something different. Perhaps, maybe if you put like some small Duvia in a bowl, and instead of dusting them with, you know, the calcium or whatnot, maybe you could dust them with some of the actual crested gecko diet. So he starts incorporating some of that flavor.
Yeah, Dave.
Would that work?
I've never even thought about that. That probably would work.
Nice.
Slowly get them transitioned over. But that is a pretty good idea. I've never even heard about that.
Well, that's stuff you come up with after 30 years of keeping reptiles.
Yeah.
Start thinking. I've had like difficult things, animals that, you know, I had a transition in the past, and, you know, we try to give them a multitude of flavors and start to get them, you know, adjusted to it. So that's how I thought of it. But yeah, all right, maybe it'll work. Just an idea for you guys.
You could also put some of the powdered, not wet form of the crested gecko diet in a bowl that you have the Duvia in also. So they, as they're biting, they might also get even more of it.
Right.
That would actually be kind of dry for them. So they probably wouldn't
it
just because of that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you know, I actually was just thinking of another thing while you guys were talking. You know, this is actually another method that they'll do if the gecko's not eating. You know, if you take the Repashi or the Pangea, the food, and you wipe it on their, kind of just touch it onto their mouth, they'll lick it off. I've never seen a gecko that I wiped some food onto their mouth, or they kind of just, I put in the gecko food in, they kind of just put their mouth in it, they always end up licking it off. So that's another thing you could do, is if you maybe want to take a little syringe, fill it with some gecko food, and kind of just maybe like put it on their mouth, the tip of their mouth, they'll lick it off. I've noticed that, and that's maybe another good way to let them get accustomed to eating that type of food and maybe not so much insects.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead and grab this other caller here. Caller from the 612 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey guys, it's Chad. How are you doing?
Oh, hey.
What's going on, Chad? Hey.
Hello.
Say with the cresteds, when you do start getting into the breeding, A, do you introduce male to the female or female to male, and then how long would you leave them together before you pull them back out or separate them?
Good question.
When the geckos are not in breeding season, they're all individually housed and tubs. But when it comes to breeding season, I have breeder tanks set up. We have breeder tubs set up. And it's a big tub, and we have the males introduced all in there. Each male gets its own tub. And then what we start doing is we start taking our biggest, strongest females and are ready to go, and we'll put them in with the males. So the males are in there originally, and then we put two or three females in the tub with them. And then after they're all done breeding, we give them like a week or two to breed. We then take the females out and put them in their individual tubs so we can monitor their egg life.
Okay, so now if you're not going to be doing the group breeding, so you're just going to be doing, you're not mixing one male with a bunch of females, just one-on-one, is there any worry about them fighting or, how do you monitor that?
I used to do one-on-one, but I kind of noticed it wasn't really working. I just feel like the female is way too stressed. It's only being them two. It's only like the male, because the male will continuously try to breed with the female. Even if they've bred already and it's been successful, the male will still try to do it. So I think at the time it'll just get too stressful because it's just constantly her. There's no attention divvied up into three other females, if you get what I'm saying.
Right, so if you were just doing a one-on-one, you'd watch them, maybe you'd lead them in for a day.
Yeah, I mean,
separate
that would be
them.
The one-on-one. See, I've done the one-on-one if I'm with people and they want to see a gecko, they want to see the gecko breed or something, I'll put the male and female together in a tub. And, sometimes I've watched the geckos breed right in front of me, sometimes. But if some geckos are, I think geckos could be shy. I mean, maybe they don't want to do that stuff while you're watching, so they'll kind of just, it's better just kind of leave them in the natural habitat.
Can't do it when you're watching.
Now, do you think it would? So, do you think that it's better to introduce like a completely unfamiliar tub for both of them? You think that's better, or I don't know.
The males actually can release a scent, and males are pretty dominant. So, if you introduce them into a new tub, both of them, that's another method that can work too. I really don't see why it can't. But when the males kind of have their own tub and a female is introduced, it's all scented up with the male. Like it promotes breeding a little more when you do it that way. Other than it being a new enclosure where every gecko or the male needs to kind of like get situated and doesn't focus more on breeding. I mean, that's just how I feel, and it's been pretty successful. So.
Okay.
Great. Thank you very
much.
All right,
Chad. Thanks a lot, Chad.
All right. Take it easy. Bye.
All right. Want to grab one more phone call while we're at it?
Do it.
All right. Caller from, let's see, I think I know who this is. Caller from the 253 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hi, David. This is Elsa Borzoi.
Hey, Elsa, how are you?
Don't put me in the running for the prize because I won some last December from Wally. And I still have a lot of it, so give someone else a chance, okay?
Are you sure?
Okay, my question for the guys is, at what grams weight should the female be before you breed them?
We recommend if they don't have a tail, then we wait until they're 35 grams. But if they do have a tail, we recommend until 40 grams.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, Elsa. All right. Okay, cool. Well, that was nice of you, Elsa.
That was nice.
Now, with leopard geckos, it's very easy to determine when a female is ovulating and ready to breed. With leopard geckos, we like to wait till they're about 50 grams or so. For most females, 45 to 50 or so. With crested geckos, with the females in particular, how do you determine when they're ovulating, for instance, when it's the right time to pair them with the male?
I've bred leopard geckos, and I've, for just, close to how long as I've been bred crested geckos, it's definitely a lot harder to tell in crested geckos than it is in leopard geckos. Leopard geckos have kind of like a see-through stomach. I mean, Dave, you're a big gecko breeder, you know what I'm saying? Like, ovulating is a lot easier to see, being at pink circles or a pink circle. Crested geckos have more of like a darker stomach, so it's not as easy to see. What I've kind of noticed that just, during breeding season, which is early March to, you know, early October, which is typically breeding season, they're kind of just ready to go. You know, you throw them in, you put them in a tank and, you know, just let kind of nature take its course. They kind of just ovulate when breeding season comes around, and it's just, you kind of, it's a little harder to tell, but, you know, they always end up getting the job done.
Well, when is the breeding season start usually for crested then?
Breeding season can start early as late February, like last week in February, and that will go from March to usually late September, early October. That's typically the breeding season. And then after that, you want to give them about 4 months of cooling where they can just kind of recuperate, get their weight back, house individually. That's when I end up housing everyone individually again. Their weight can get back up, and they can get ready for the next season once they're all caught up to weight.
You know what? I find it very interesting that the temperature that crested geckos can be kept at successfully and digest their food. You know, as a, you know, as like a lifelong reptile owner and keeper and breeder, you know, I'm so used to temperature being such a huge factor in keeping the animals healthy, having them be able to digest their food properly. But you're with crested geckos, I mean, like 70 degrees and such is normal. It just, for some reason, it just doesn't register right in my head, but I know it's the truth. It's just fascinating to me. It really is.
I come from a background with dart frogs, so mm-hmm. I've always known to not go above 80. So mm-hmm. it's actually spot on for me because I've always dart frogs. But with my mom's dragon.
Yeah.
With my mom's dragon, you need like 110 degrees, 115 degrees just for the dragon to live. But I'm not used to having any heat at all. So
where are these guys from in nature? Where are they originate from?
New Caledonia.
Okay. So
island off in the strip. And it's on the coast of Australia, New Caledonia.
Okay. So it's a tropical, tropical climate, more or less.
Weren't they like almost extinct? I thought I heard something about that.
Yes, actually, they were thought to be extinct for like a long time. They just kind of just dropped off the face of the earth. They were rediscovered in 94, 95. I think I believe they were rediscovered in the late 80s, and then they didn't get popular in the pet trade until 94, 95. I apologize. I have my numbers messed up. And then they're starting to get really popular over the years. But, yeah, they were you know, thought to be extinct. They were thought to be prehistoric, and then
wow.
They were found again, and people just started realizing, you know, they're great animals. The popularity shot up, and honestly, the popularity has increased over the last few years, and, you know, high too, like really high increase.
Now, I remember that when they first came on the scene. I totally remember that.
How did they end up in the pet trade when they were like nearly extinct? Did the zoos start breeding projects, and then eventually the public got a hold of them after they weren't endangered anymore? Or how did it? I'm lost. That's crazy.
They literally found so many, and just what happened
It's
a little different than leopard geckos, how they did it. I'm pretty familiar with the Ron Trepper, you know, story, but with crested geckos, they pretty much just found so many, and, you know, just, I guess, through the like, expos, because expos have been going on, you know, for a while and stuff, and I guess it just found its way there. Breeders just got, you know, they became so easy to breed in captivity, and then just slowly it started, you know, so many people like, wow, these are really cool pets, and they just shot up since there.
Wow.
Okay. We have another caller here. I'm going to go ahead and grab the caller from the 973 area code. 973, you are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hi.
Hi, caller. What's your question?
Hi.
I just had a question on, like, about how big does the crested gecko get?
Okay.
About, like, 8.5.
No, it's like 6-7 inches. With the tail.
Yeah.
It's about 6 to 7 inches with the tail. Some males tend to get a little bit thicker, a little bit longer. Female, without a tail, pretty much like five inches. But, yeah, the tail adds about 3 inches to the gecko. It also adds a little weight, too, about 3 to 4 grams sometimes. So that's why you want to make sure that if they have a tail, you breed them a little bit heavier in size.
Okay, thank you.
What's your name, caller?
Alejandra.
Okay, thank you for calling.
Hello,
thank you.
All right, that's great. Let's take one more call while we're at it. We have a caller from the, let's see. Wow, I've got a lot of people on here. Okay, I'm going to take the caller from the 330 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hello.
Hello, are you there?
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, okay. There's another one here. Let me take another caller. Caller from, let's see, the 432 area code. Oh, wait, I think that Loki? No, Loki doesn't want to come on. Okay, you know what? I'm not sure. I think the other people are just listening. I'm going to ask one of my questions now. Now,
all right.
Now you have your female and your male. Now, I want to get into actually breeding, because if I decide to get in a pair of these guys, I mean, if I decide to get into Prestons, I'm going to get a pair because I want to actually experience breeding them.
Definitely.
Right. So suppose I go ahead and I buy, well, first question is it better to buy an adult or is it better to buy sub-adults and grow them up yourself?
Now, this is an experience that I've learned over the year that it is always better to buy little stuff and breed it up your own, because you know what you're feeding it, you know where you're getting it from, you know that it's never been bred yet, you know that it's still got many good years of breeding. And you go ahead and buy an adult proven breeder because it's $40-$50 and, oh, you can breed it, you don't know why the person's giving up a female. Why would you give up a perfectly good female or male that can breed and, you know, give you babies? So it's always better to buy from reputable people who, you know, have good high-end babies. And you can grow that up yourself, and that's the best way to get into breeding, for breeding
Absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely, I agree. All right, so then so I want to go ahead and buy a nice pair of Crested now, and I actually do. So I particularly like the reds and the Halloween face ones. The nice
focus on those. That's like the focus of our thing is nice red Halloweenish type colors and stuff. You know, crested geckos, there's so many different colors, and it's not all discovered like leopard geckos yet, so you really don't know what you can get. It's great.
Okay, all right. So if I get a nice pair of reds that I like, and I buy them young, and I grow them up, and, you know, I get them to breeding size, and I'm successful, and the female actually becomes fertilized, now what can I expect as far as egg laying? How often will they lay the eggs? How many will she lay during the season? And then we'll get into incubation.
She'll lay two clutches of it. First time breeders will lay two eggs, but that doesn't always mean it's necessarily good. So the first season with a lot of females, you know, it's pretty much with a lot of reptiles, the first season isn't exactly the greatest. It can have a few bad eggs, but that doesn't mean it's all bad eggs. Then the second season is typically the season where you're going to have most success. The female will be laying two eggs every month, and she'll lay about typically 8 to 10 eggs in a season.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, cool. All right. Now, what about incubation?
Before we get to incubation, the sperm, how long can they actually, after breeding, how long will they store that? Because I've heard some crazy stories.
I'm sorry, did you say how long they'll continue living after breeding? What'd you say? I was like, can you repeat your question? I didn't hear it.
Yeah, no. How long can they, after breeding them, after the male mates with the female, how long can they actually store the sperm?
Store the sperm for the rest of the season. They'll store the sperm for the rest of the season. I'm pretty sure it's the same thing.
Okay.
So leopard geckos, they'll be able to produce eggs throughout the whole thing. Males can breed with, like, up to, like, 10, 15 females. I mean, there's no limit on them. Females, there's no limit on, you know, they get one season. The sperm, once they mate, they hold the sperm for the whole season, and then the next season you can introduce them to a new male or the same male, whatever you choose to do.
Okay, cool.
Awesome.
one of the... one of the things that's what's the incubation temperature, Danny or Buddy?
Incubation temperature is pretty much room temperature. They don't even need an incubator. Honestly, most of my,
oh my God.
Eggs I've hatched, I didn't even put them in an incubator. It was on my top shelf in summertime. It was like 78 degrees in my room, and they hatched within 80 days. 85 days is actually the time it hatched. If you incubate if you put it in an incubator and you set it for 80 degrees, or if your room is just 80 degrees in the summer, then it will hatch out probably a lot sooner, 60 days even. But if it's a colder temperature, like in your room, it's like 70, which would be the minimum with the eggs, it could take up to 110, 120 days, actually, for a gecko to hatch at that low of a temperature. But you don't even need an incubator.
All right. Now, my next question, everybody's probably thinking the same thing. Are crested geckos temperature sex determined?
It's not like leopard geckos at all. No, it's not like that. I guess I have heard some stuff that people say that cooler temperatures do lead to females also, but I haven't actually been able to prove that out myself, so I'm not going to go ahead and say an answer that I can't necessarily say is true. But what I do know is that, that with hotter temperatures, they hatch faster, and with cooler temperatures, they hatch slower. That's really the best thing I could tell you about egg laying. It's not really sex-related, well, at least what I could say.
Okay. All right. We have a caller from the 401 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio. Chrissy, is that you? Chrissy, you're on Gecko Nation Radio.
No.
Chrissy, you there?
I am here. How are you guys doing tonight?
You're doing good. What's your question for us?
Awesome. You didn't pick up the right number.
I can hear
you,
Chrissy.
I'm here. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing good.
Hello?
Can you hear us?
I can hear now.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, what's your question?
Okay. I've bred crested geckos many years ago. And when I was breeding, there was no such thing as an albino crested gecko or a white crested gecko. As far as you know, is anybody any closer to producing that infamous white crested gecko?
Good
question.
Right now, there's a debate on whether some really light crespies are considered albino. I have a really cool colored cresty at home, like whitish blue, but I wouldn't consider her albino at all. No, I'm
not proven that.
Yeah, it's not proven
that
no one's made an albino crested yet.
Okay, I was just kind of curious. Since it's been, I haven't really bred cresteds in quite a few years. I do own some still, but I haven't actively bred them in a while, and I haven't really been too firm in the industry for quite some time. So I was just curious if anybody had gotten further.
Yeah, no, not that they've come out publicly and stated.
Or, yeah, the breeder, if someone produced an albino crested, I mean, the price of that would be insane. And you know what? He's probably keeping that secret to himself and not letting it out so he has his own mind of it, you know?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But it'd still be cool. I can't wait till they actually do it, though.
Oh, definitely. You know what? It'll be
someday.
Done. The genetics are just, it's a world of possibilities. You know, it's nothing's
yeah.
been all
no,
discovered yet.
Yeah, it's very,
yet.
Very true. And I know cresties are still new, so hopefully
yeah,
in the next
genetics
couple
are
years.
A little hard with them. Genetics are a little hard with cresties. Definitely a little, there's not as much, and it's kind of a little different. You know, you can breed a really expensive crestie to a really expensive crestie, and it's not, you know, you're going to get nice stuff, but you could also get, like, you know, a flame, a normal kind of original.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, so, it's, you know, you could, don't be surprised if that happens, but that doesn't, you know, but necessarily, you know, nicer stuff is going to get you nicer stuff. So that's not always the case, but that's the thing about crested geckos, that's why the genetics are still kind of wacky, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely. And have you guys, one more quick question if I have time. Like with leopard geckos, where temperature can actually determine the amount of black within the animal, have you guys
mm-hmm.
noticed anything like that in the crested geckos?
Actually, geckos that have been incubated longer, this is from my personal experience. Other people might have had different experiences, but I've actually noticed that geckos that I have that have took longer to hatch actually were kind of a darker color. That could have just been that's just what happened with geckos I bred, that it was just a darker gecko. But I have noticed that a lower temperature actually did have a kind of a bit of a lighter color. But that, like I said, that could have definitely just been
just how it came out, and it's a coincidence, but I have noticed that a darker color crested, darker color cresteds came out when they took longer to hatch, but that's not necessarily the case. That's just my experience.
Very cool. Thank you for sharing that.
Yep, thank you for asking.
Hey.
Of course.
Hey, Chrissy, are you ready for next week? It's Loki Reptile.
I am, and I'm super excited.
Awesome.
I'm really excited. I'm ready to go.
Awesome. All right, cool. Let's talk during the week and talk about it.
Yep, I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
All right, cool. All right, you guys mentioned a little bit about the morphs, and now this is my interpretation of, from what I've talked to other Crested breeders about, and you guys let me know what your feelings are. It seems like that a lot of these genetics are just in the Crested geckos, and basically Crested gecko breeders are actually trying to deconstruct the different variations at this point and isolate the different traits as opposed to trying to develop the traits. Is that what you find is going on?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, the only way you can really prove out anything is by breeding it. You know, Dave, being a leopard gecko breeder yourself, you know that you can't really determine what people say unless you really breed it. Traits, they just, you know, they still need to be unlocked. They just still need to be proven out, and that's just what breeders' main goals are. And you know, if you create a line of something new, you know, it's best to just kind of hold that and, you know, see what else you can unlock, and that's the only way you're going to do it is by proving it out by breeding it.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. I hope they find an albino. I think it's just like a numbers game, like my friend Daryl always says, where if enough people are breeding them, sooner or later it's just going to come out. I mean, melanistic, leucistic, patternless. I mean, it's only a matter of time.
I mean, Cresties have only really been in the hobby for 20 years, most, and not too many people have bred them. So compared to the leopards with albinism everywhere, it's pretty rare to find an albino Crestie, if possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Now, what's everybody's favorite? Is it morph with the Cresties? Are they actually identifying the different variations? Okay.
Morph, yeah. Well,
what are you guys' favorite morph? Do you have?
A cool thing about crested geckos is they fire up. When it's during the daytime, they're not, being sprayed down. They'll be more of a duller color, and it is nothing cooler than watching your – if it's a really nice gecko, it may not be necessarily dull, but some cresteds will look not that well when they're dry, but when you start spraying them and at the nighttime, you just need to see how the colors just pop. And their colors only get better as they get older. Personally, we are a huge fan here of full pinstripes, which means that their scales on their back are just raised, so it kind of looks like two lines going directly from their back spaced apart.
Right.
Really cool. And then the other one of our favorites is reds. Crest Central actually focuses on reds. We have a lot of reds that we found over the years, grew them up ourselves, and now they are actually in a breeder tank right now, doing what they got to do to get get some reds for us, you know. So, yeah, reds are really cool because, I mean, when they fire up, I'll tell you, their red is like their fire truck red. I mean, when they fire up, it's really, really bright red. It's a really cool color. No second guess. If a gecko is red, there's no second guess if it's red. It's got the color.
Huh. How about this, though? Now, when I'm at a reptile show, I see all different types of cresteds, and the way they look at the shows, usually they're probably somewhat stressed because they've been transported to the shows and, they're in the deli cups and whatever, and they're not probably in their most comfortable state. Are those colors and the way they look at the shows representative of how they actually look when they're so-called fired up, or does it vary? What do you guys notice?
You know, actually, the riling them up with being all the constant motion, the wet, when you put them in a deli cup if you're doing that for shows, we don't really do the deli cups for shows. We actually kind of set them up in their little critter keepers. They have a little bit more room. But, you know, you spray the deli cup or critter keeper, get them fired up, humid. They actually get fired up at the shows. If it's humid and they're wild up enough, they will get fired up. And a lot of the times, geckos look great at the shows, and you know, there's been times where I've had a gecko that was fired up really nice at a show. Someone comes over, they want to buy it, they love how it looks colored, and they call me up and they go, I got home and
the gecko doesn't look like it did at the show. I'm just like give it a few hours, spray it, watch what happens. Like, wow, how do they do that? And I was like, yeah. So I mean, it's that sometimes if the person selling the geckos keep them humid enough and people are kind of taking out of the tubs and playing with them, they'll fire it up. And a lot of the times, it actually is their true color. Not all the time, but a lot of the times, their true color does show at the shows.
Okay, that's cool. I'm going to take a call here. We got a caller from the 432 area code. 432, you're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hi, Dave. It's Daryl. How you doing tonight?
What's up, Big Daryl?
Well, I'm sitting here breeding geckos, just leopards. I don't have any cresties, but they're sure neat.
Not yet.
Not yet. Listen to you. Well, all the questions, you guys are doing pretty good. These shows are getting better. All the questions that I had, y'all pretty much covered. The only thing I was curious about, I was intrigued with the temperature, so you keep them a lot cooler, correct?
Yeah. A lot cooler than like a bearded dragon or a euro, where you have to keep them in the low hundreds.
Right. They don't. They're not like luchis where they breed. For the same. They pair up for life. They don't do anything like that, do they?
No, they don't pair up for life. Not like the luchis.
Well, heck of a deal. I'm
yeah.
sure I'll
very
have
easy,
to.
Right?
What's that, Dave?
What'd you say?
Don't they seem very easy, Daryl? Like, it's almost like, I mean, it's like so you're effortless. All you got to do is, use the powder food, put a little water in there, and keep them at room temperature, and you're just pretty much good to go.
Right.
Yeah, that's, how about the wintertime? I see you said they went to a 4-month cooling period. How cool do you let them go?
Oh, I mean, by cooling period, I don't necessarily mean, the temperature just drops naturally. I kind of mean just getting them away from the male, keeping them individually housed and letting them rest, they're not going to be egg-laying anymore. The winter months are going to naturally bring this temperature down. That's what I mean by cooling period. Just my room temperature will drop from, in the summer it's like 75, 76. In the winter, my room will go like 68 and 69. That's what I mean by cooling. They're rested.
Right.
They get their weight back up. They're not laying eggs anymore. And then back in March, I will put them back in with their males, and breeding season begins again.
So you just leave them together for, say, a month and then separate them?
I leave them, their males, about a month. I take them out of their tanks. I put them in their individual tubs where I can monitor their egg laying. Because this way, if I left them all in the tank and they were laying eggs, I wouldn't know what eggs came from who, and that would be a problem because then I'd be, giving the people and not knowing the actual dad or the actual mom. I mean, I have known the dad, but not the actual mom. So you want to make sure you keep it organized and you keep good notes.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Okay, so cool. Thanks, Daryl.
Well,
you have anything else
to
ask?
No, I mean, it's intriguing. I've been waiting on this one all week to listen, so I've been sitting here cleaning a few cages, feeding a few animals, and breeding a few animals. But it's very, very intriguing. I've seen a couple of them at the local box stores, but I've never been real close to any real nice ones.
You better make it out to the New York show and see some of the ones they have.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. We have a couple of shows down here in Texas that I'm, about 4 or 5 hours away from, and it seems like this year every time they've had one, I've been working. But with my crazy schedule, so. But one of these days I'll get to do it, and I'm sure that a Cresty's in my future sometime. I don't know when.
Oh no, definitely, especially if you have a busy schedule. I mean, there's nothing better than them. I mean, you spray them. If you're busy and you're not home in the morning, spray them at night. They'll be fine. It's not like they need to be, like constantly worried about all the time. They're really hardy. Insects are not a big deal. Give them some powdered food, the Crest Gecko diet. Give it to them. You're gone for a few days. They're not going to die. They're really hardy animals, and they're good for people who aren't, they don't need to be so worried about like a lot of other reptiles. They're really kind of,
Do you feed them any fresh fruit at all, or just do the powdered diet?
I've heard of people doing it. I've never personally done it. Baby food is another thing that people have fed them, and I am against that too. I mean, the crested gecko diet is made specifically for them. There's really no need to give them any of that other stuff. We're past the crested gecko diet, and insects are predominantly all you need for a crested gecko, nothing else.
Yeah, a buddy of mine, I guess whenever they really started getting famous again in the early 90s, he picked some up at a Repticon show. He had a real red one that back then was, there were a lot of people drooling over it. And that's what, you know, of course, you know, we didn't have the all the stuff that's out there today. And I know he fed his baby food.
Yeah, that was a big thing. You know, people didn't know any better.
Yeah.
The baby food is really, really high in sugar. It doesn't really have the proper nutrients for them. I've seen geckos, crested geckos getting, like, you know, metabolic bone disease from that, and I've seen them, like, kind of disfigured on only being fed baby food. I mean, a picture I've seen, it could have been fake. You know, you can't always trust everything on the internet, but, you know, like I said.
Yeah, he also fed them mealworms, and I think he said he would feed them papaya, fresh papaya as well.
I mean, I guess that would be fine, but the mealworms and the baby food, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
of course, this is 25 years ago. I mean, we've come a long way since this.
It's gotten so much more research through the years. You know, they're only getting better and better.
Exactly. Well, you guys keep up the good work. I'm listening and doing my thing, and I appreciate all the hard work and good information you guys are putting out there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for calling.
You bet, Dave.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Okay, we have another call here from the caller from the 201 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio. Caller,
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's your name, caller?
Okay, I'm Samantha.
Hi, Samantha. What's your question?
Hi, Samantha. Okay. So I have two questions.
Okay.
And the first is, I've heard about this special food for, like, the crested geckos that enhances their color, and I was wondering if you guys knew anything about it and, like, if it actually worked.
Good question.
Actually, Repashy does make a product. It's called Super Pig. Super Pig just kind of enhances the color of the geckos. I also picked up this other product at the show at White Plains the other day, a few weeks ago actually, and I don't know the name of it, but I do know it's basically kind of like it's a version of Super Pig, and I spread it to the babies, and I think I'm going to start doing that before we go to shows and stuff, kind of just give the geckos that Super Pig and that color boost, so people can truly see. It doesn't really make the colors more, like, crazy different than when they're not. It just kind of boosts it, so it shows during the show, and you know the gecko's true colors. So, you know, you don't pass over something you really could like because it's kind of not fired up. The Super Pig kind of fires the gecko up, and it's a really nice thing to do if you're trying to, you know, highlight a certain gecko you're trying to, you know, sell or show off, you know.
Well, that's pretty cool. I also have a second
question. What's your second
question? Okay, so if I wanted to breed, like, I have a crested gecko. If I wanted to start breeding geckos and, like, I got a gecko that had an underbite, would it be bad to breed that?
We actually had a gecko that that had an underbite, and we put it on a Facebook auction, and you want to make sure that with a gecko with an underbite, it's more pet quality. You don't want to breed a gecko with an underbite. It is one of the main deformities in crested geckos, overbites and underbites. I haven't heard of a specific, like, you know, someone saying that they bred a gecko with an underbite and it's come out, the babies have come out with underbites. But, you know, just as a general rule of thumb, you don't want to breed anything that can possibly spread that genetics to the babies, because it's just going to saturate the market and you don't want to do that. So I don't recommend breeding anything with a deformity, especially like an underbite.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Samantha.
Thanks, Samantha.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I think that'll be the last call we're going to take for tonight. We're nearing the end, but Amanda wants to ask a few more questions. Go ahead, Mandy.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. I had a question. What do you guys use as far as incubation medium?
I've tried a whole bunch of different things in my time of breeding. I've tried vermiculite, I've tried hatchrite, I've tried perlite. And the thing I've had most success with that we sell on our website, and I got it from Dale, from Dale's Breed of Dragons, it's vermiculite, but it's not like the fine-grade vermiculite. It's like this chunkier piece of vermiculite. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but just the chunks are kind of a little thicker. Yep. And honestly, it holds humidity great. It keeps the eggs in place, and it's not that messy. Like, it's not, the humidity's perfect. It holds the eggs perfectly, and you put half the egg covered by vermiculite, half the egg upright with no vermiculite, and they'll hatch in their time. And we do check. Okay. If you want to check that out, we have that on Cresty Central on our website, and it's a great product for egg incubation. I've had 100% success rate with it. And I can't say the same, except with perlite. I've had problems with it getting too humid. My eggs were molding, but that might be me messing up. So vermiculite, that's a really good product, especially the big chunk one. So you check that out on our website if you're interested.
Okay. And then also the amount of moisture, would you do the same like as you would the amount of moisture in the medium as you would a leopard gecko, or do they require more, less? I
don't
know.
No, in general with the leopard gecko, crested gecko egg, when it's being incubated, pretty much the same thing. I put about two inches of medium in the egg container. I poke two pin-sized holes in the sides with 2 inches of vermiculite, the chunky vermiculite. And then how I keep it moist is I will take the vermiculite, I'll put it under a sink, and I'll go through the water 3 times. And then what I'll do is I'll take the vermiculite and I'll squeeze it. If it clumps up in your hand like a ball, that's way too much water. But if it's kind of just a little bit of water is coming out, that's not a big deal. But if it's like a waterfall of water coming out, then that's a little too much medium. And then you might want to get rid of that because you don't want the eggs to mold.
Gotcha.
And we also do have incubators on our website also. So we have, there's two types of incubators, the Hovibator and the Reptibator. Reptibator is just a little more technologically advanced, but it's going pretty good.
Okay, cool.
We're going to do a little show, a little special for the show. If you guys are interested in any incubators, we're also including a free bag of the vermiculite with any incubators. So if you want to check out CrestCentral.com and you're interested in getting started with breeding, we're sending out a free bag of vermiculite with incubators purchase. So just if you guys want to check that out.
Nice. Good. Okay, we're going to take one last call that I see that's in here. Another caller from the 201 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hi, this is Greg from New Jersey.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
What's your question?
Hi, well, I've actually been to my fair share of reptile enclosures there, and I've actually seen you guys vending there. You guys probably know who I am, but so I've been talking to different people, and there's a whole bunch of controversy on what size containers to keep baby crested geckos in. I've heard that you can keep them in something as small as a 4x4 little cup, and I've heard people say that you should keep them in large critter keepers and everything in between. So I was wondering what you guys, how's your freshly hatched crested geckos in?
As soon as the crested gecko hatches, we put them right into critter keeper minis. Being that it's a baby and being that we are just trying to make sure it gets the most delicate stage of life for really any animal is when it's a baby, so that's when it needs to have the most care. Food needs to be easy to find, and water needs to be easy to find, too, simply just by spraying it down. But we recommend the Critter Keeper Minis. They're cheap. They work well. And then as the crested gecko starts to get older, if you're talking tub-wise, I would use about a 15-16 quart. If you're going in size of a tank, I recommend a 12-12-18. For babies, definitely the Critter Keeper. I mean, a Critter Keeper large would probably be fine, too. It's still pretty small, but... You know, for fresh hatchlings, I recommend the Critter Keeper small and mini.
All right, and also Critter Keepers, now they have the ventilation in the top, which I know lets out just a ton of humidity. So what would you recommend for keeping humidity in?
Yeah, typically, the Critter Keepers are pretty good with it holds humidity, and it keeps humidity
it holds humidity and it releases humidity fairly well. But if you're having a problem with the humidity being released too fast, which typically I've never had to take some saran wrap and maybe block off half the ventilation, but typically you shouldn't have a problem. It does a good job of keeping the humidity pretty well, with paper towel, that is.
All right, well, thank you guys for your help, and I'll see you at the next show.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Anytime.
We have a question in the chat room from Angela. Lovely Angela asks, what age for kids and for young herpers that are getting involved with geckos, how old does a kid need to be able to be responsible enough with crested? Because they can be kind of delicate. How old do you think someone should be, Danny and Buddy?
I mean, it's really not much age as it is how the certain kid is. If the kid is very kind of like, you know, grabbing the gecko really hard, that's more of the problem. I mean, I've been to shows where I've had kids that are probably 3 to 4, and, you know, they're so interested in the cresty, and they hold it lightly, and there's no problem. But I've also had kids, or even 6, 7, who, you know, grab the gecko, and they're squeezing it, and they're just kind of being really rough with it. So I think it's more a matter of how your kid's demeanor is and not so much the age. If you see that, you know, the kid's responsible and can hold the gecko without, you know, squeezing it or anything like that, you know, you should have no problem. A kid of any age, really, as long as he's like that, he's really rough. So I wouldn't recommend that, just being that the crested gecko could drop his tail if he grabs it, especially at a young age.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, we're almost at the end here, guys. And I just want to say, number one, that this was a great episode. A lot of great information about crested geckos.
Yeah, we've been preparing for this. We've been very excited to get on the show.
I'm happy to have been able to get you guys on here. And we had a lot of people in the chat room for it, and a lot of great callers. So I'm going to, just for the callers, everybody that called in tonight, I'm going to do the raffle tomorrow afternoon in the Gecko Nation group. So keep your eyes peeled on that, and we'll announce the winner. But, guys, I want to give you this opportunity to have any closing remarks and also to give out your information for everyone to find you.
All right. Well, first, we definitely just want to thank Steve. We want to thank you, Dave, and we want to thank Amanda for being a great co-host. Dave, we really appreciate you getting us on this show.
Very welcome.
I want to tell you guys, he's very appreciative too. Dave, thank you for putting us on the show. And Steve, thank you for making us that promo video. We really appreciate it. We want you guys to check out our Facebook page. Dave, I don't know if maybe you would mind just maybe putting it on Gecko Nation or something, just our how to get us on Twitter or Facebook, if that's possible.
You are free to promote. Danny, you guys are free to promote yourself in Gecko Nation.
I can just go on Gecko Nation if you guys want to check that. But our Facebook page, Cresty Central, Twitter, Cresty Central. If you have any questions on supplies or anything, you can email Buddy. He does the supplies, CrestyCentral@yahoo.com. I'm CrestyCentral@hotmail.com, and I'm for the geckos. So if you have any questions on geckos, you can come to me at Hotmail. If you have any questions on supplies, you can go to Buddy@yahoo. We offer 24/7 customer support on all our products and geckos. We also have a coupon right now, as Dave told you, 10% off on our website. Enter GNR10, all capitals, for the rest of the week. We'll be offering 10% off any website on Cresty Central. Unfortunately, we don't have any geckos on the website right now. Breeding is still underway, but we will be attending Oaks on next Saturday, the 15th, I believe, and we will be selling some geckos and some crickets, and Buddy will have setups. So thank you again, Dave. Thanks again, Dave, and
yep.
That's it for us.
Awesome. All right, guys. We'll have to have you back for a follow-up, maybe in the future. How's that sound?
Hey, we can't wait.
Cool. All right. Have a good luck at the show next weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Dave. See you, Dave.
All right.
Bye, guys.
All right. What do you think, Mandy? How did we do tonight?
I thought it was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, right? It almost makes me want to go get rid of all my leopard geckos and get into crested, right?
Well, you know, if you need somewhere to put them, I'm sure I could talk the husband into letting some more gecko babies come live here.
You know, I got to tell you, I mean, I really like the reds. I like some of those Halloweens. I can see myself having a few here. I don't think I'm going to go crazy with them because I love my leopard geckos. But
yeah.
I think it'd be nice to have a few. Yeah.
You know,
but,
I'm actually, I didn't get to tell you my favorite morph. You ready for this?
What is it?
I love the ones that are really, either really dark, I'm talking like really, really dark on their sides, with just the high contrast, light colored, as light as you can get it on their back down, I guess the pinstripe look. But that's probably got to be my favorite, is just that, I'm not crazy about the tries, I'm not crazy about like these yellowy, browny, look at just that deep, dark, either chocolate or nearly black in that bright-colored stripe. That's my favorite.
Yep.
And that's the one that
those
I was playing with at the expo, and I'm in love. Love at first sight.
They are nice. Yeah, I know the ones. I know exactly what you're talking about. They are so cool. What about, there's also ones that are really black on the sides, and they have like an orangish color on the top stripe.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen those?
The bright red, the bright, bright,
mm-hmm.
bright, ridiculous red with that beautiful contrast of like a yellowy cream on their dorsal stripe. That's just, oh, gorgeous.
I know. They're totally incredible, some of them. Yeah, but, you know, it seems, though, that even if you breed two of the like kinds together, you won't always that result sometimes. Like, it's not like a line
right
thing. It's really weird how the genes work. So they're still trying to figure it all out. You know, at least with leopard geckos, though, you do have a little bit more control over the genetics and the outcomes, I think. But still, I mean, the crested geckos are really cool, and they feel so nice. I like the feeling of the velvet of their skin, right? And the way they grab onto you, they kind of like hug your finger, and right? They kind of just
they're floppy
latch
little
on.
Floppy sticky toes.
Yeah,
latched on
right
to my face. I was looking, so I'm sitting there in the chair behind the table playing with the one that I like, and all of a sudden I'm like, I think it's gonna jump on my bloop right on my face. I'm like, yeah, nice. Like, I didn't even flinch. I'm like, I knew he just had that look, but no, they're adorable, definitely.
Yeah, well, we did a good job tonight. And excellent job co-hosting, Mandy. It's always a pleasure having you on the show with me.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
Yeah, let's do it again soon. We'll get you on another one, as long as you like doing it.
Yep, anytime.
All right, cool.
Let me know.
All right, absolutely. I definitely will. Well, thanks again. I'm going to let you go, and I think we'll
Alrighty.
Play a song at the end. Yeah, I'll talk to you soon, and I'll see you at the next show.
Yep. See you later, Dave.
All right. Good night, Mandy. Thanks again. All right, everybody. Excellent, excellent show. I'm going to go ahead and play the outro, and I'll come back with my closing remarks, and then I'm going to play a cool song, a cool tune for you guys.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Fine Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. The jazz music you heard tonight was generously donated and created by Jeremy Turgeon of J&D Reptiles. Thank you very much, Jeremy, for the great musical pieces. You can check out Jeremy at J&D Reptiles on YouTube and on Facebook. And a very special thank you to our news anchor, graphic designer, and audio tech, Steve Barker. All the graphics, audio sponsor plugs, and music overlays were assembled by Steve. Check out Steve on YouTube at BC Barker Creations. He has some terrific videos for the herp community with amazing geckos and snakes.
Please support the U.S. Herpetocultural Alliance and USARC. Gecko Nation Radio is proud to support both of these organizations. Please donate to USARC so that they have the funds needed to legally protect pet owners' rights nationwide. You can donate to the USARC Legal Defense Fund at www.usarc.org. If you would also like to learn about advocacy and how you can take action on a state and local level, please subscribe to the U.S. Herpetocultural Alliance newsletter and blog at www.usherp.org. All right, everybody. Excellent show. I'm really pleased to have been able to do something again about Crescent. My closing remarks are this. There are so many interesting species to work with in herpetoculture and in geckos in particular. It basically comes down to finding the one that really enthralls you. For me, it's all of them, and that's part of my problem. But if you are undecided, I get a lot of questions from people, Dave, I don't know which morph or which species to work with. Basically, do your research and wait for that one that just you can't stop thinking about. It's the one that you can't stop looking and it just gets you excited and you want to learn more about it, then that's the one for you. Okay? That's how you figure out which one to work with. Folks, next week we have another special episode with my good friends John and Chrissy from Low Key Reptiles. I regularly vend with them at the New York show, and we're going to talk about fat tails. We're going to talk about roaches, keeping roaches, and a bunch of other stuff. So don't miss that episode. I want to thank everybody that was in the chat room. We had a great turnout tonight, and I hope to see everybody again next week. I'm going to sign off for now, and I just want to thank everyone in the Gecko Nation group for being great. One last thing I mentioned in the beginning of the show, that instead of paying for Facebook promotions, I'm going to basically give back to the community. So if you like Gecko Nation Radio, help to share, comment, like the page, the posts, and help us reach more people. And I'm going to regularly do surprise raffles and such for people that help us out. So you never know. If you help, you might be in the next raffle for something cool. So all right, everybody, have a good night. Until next time, check this song out. It's for all you sci-fi fans out there. We'll be right back.
Uh-huh.